Christian tradition. So I know Unitarians aren't exactly Christian, but it's kind of, I think it has more association with that in its origin. Would Tom and Ethan, would you be willing to address that question?
Yeah, this is Tom. I can try. Yes, Unitarian Universalism does come out of the Judeo-Christian tradition, and so we very much claim that as part of our heritage. A lot of our folks who are in our congregation would not necessarily identify as Christian, but it is certainly part of our history and tradition. No, it's one of the things that breaks my heart as a minister is seeing the violence that organized religion can do, and particularly when it comes to the hatred perpetuated against in this time in history, particularly our trans and non-binary community. Has a gay man who gay folks were not always welcome not that long ago, and now I feel very much welcomed and celebrated in my tradition, and I hope we do that for trans and non-binary people as well, because the certainly a fundamental part of our tradition is proclaiming a message of love and acceptance. And if we can't do that, then we're not doing our work. Portland is a magnet for folks, and so we do welcome people from other traditions. But I think it's also important to note that Portland has work to do, and yes, maybe this is a safer place, but we still have work to do right here in our own community. So I hope I answered that question, Emma.
Yes, thank you. Ethan, would you care to address that?
Yeah. I relate to this question and this story on a very real level. Having just moved here in the summer of 2020, as a gay United Methodist pastor, it was still not safe for me to be out in Texas, where I previously came from, were I to be in a relationship with another guy. Some of my colleagues could have filed charges with the bishop and could have gotten into all kinds of trouble. And so I know very well about coming out to this part of the country and where we are here in Portland. For me, why I still cling to the church and to this tradition, my family, my local churches growing up, they did all too well the work of telling me that God loves me, that I'm welcome in the church. And as I was talking about earlier, at my baptism, the church made covenant to help me grow in the faith. And I don't think that they were lying at that point. And so I'm thankful that I get to serve here in the West, in Portland, where we get to sort of lead the way in reforming and helping the United Methodist Church grow into embracing and affirming people of all gender identities and sexual orientations. There was a really cool story last month within our church. There was a recently retired bishop in the northeastern part of the United States who it came out that her wife, who was also a clergy person, came out as trans. And so that was the first time that at the bishop level that we've had any association with trans family members or spouses. And so we've still got lots of work to do, lots of progress to make, but I think stories like that one and communities like we have here in Portland where LGBT people are affirmed, especially trans and non-binary persons are welcomed. I think these are the steps that we can take to begin to repair that bridge and sort of teach the rest of the church what it means to embrace and love all of the people who God loves.
Thank you. And so my last question, I guess it would be for you, Cassidy, and I guess maybe it's related a little bit. How do, I know that a lot of people who were raised, a lot of trans non-binary folks who were raised within like maybe a Christian or some kind of Judeo-Christian tradition, gravitate toward paganism and towards Wicca because it offers them something that maybe they don't see in the tradition of their origin that they were necessarily, that they may have been rejected from. How do you help them transition into a practice of paganism and witchcraft that like really embraces and nurtures their identity as trans and non-binary folks?
I think we do have a lot of queer, trans, and non-binary pagans because, you know, being LGBTQ is a marginalized identity and being pagan is also a marginalized identity as a minority religion. So there's, you know, there's potentially some overlap there, some feeling that this might be more welcoming or safer. And I think largely that's true, although pagan is a very large umbrella, so I certainly can't speak to all pagan groups. But for us, I mean, one of the things that we do is anytime we put out an invitation for any kind of event or any kind of class, we are very specific that we're inviting trans people and non-binary people, and that's right there in the invite. And we also like to check in and make sure that that language is conveying what we'd like to convey and that there's space to offer feedback if people feel like there's ways that we could improve with that. But yeah, I think it's something that we're, at least in the Portland community, very aware of, making our language inclusive, making our rituals inclusive, and making space for anybody to step in and become involved, and especially, you know, trans people, queer people, people of color, to step in if they desire to and help plan a ritual. It's all pretty informal, so there's definitely a lot of room for new people to come and add their take on things. So yeah, just trying to be welcoming and then trying to really listen when there's feedback or when there's desire expressed from people in the community about how to move forward and become even more inclusive and really live into that desire to be welcoming to everyone.
Thank you. We've been talking tonight with Cassidy Brown, Tom Disrood, and Ethan Gregory, who are all participants in the Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Transpositive.
Thank you.
Good evening. We're talking with Rabbi Ariel Stone with Congregation Shir Tikva. Rabbi Stone, welcome to Transpositive. Thank you. Can you tell us, so Congregation Shir Tikva is hosting this year's Transgender Day of Remembrance Interfaith Vigil. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your congregation?
I'm one of the longer serving congregational rabbis now in Portland. I serve the only East Side congregation. Shir Tikva is 19 years old this year and newly in a space which allows us to collaborate outside of the traditional walls of a synagogue. We are an independent shul and we are carving an independent path through collaborating with other East Side Jewish organizations to create a common space in which we can all thrive and figure out what Judaism looks like in the 21st century.
Thank you. And one of the highlights of the vigil this year is that a transgender rabbi, Rabbi Emily, is going to be giving the main reflection. Rabbi Emily, my understanding is she's one of only a handful of transgender rabbis in the whole world right now. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, it's interesting to me to consider that it's taken so long, because there's nothing in Judaism that condemns or points out a transgender person as not being able to be a rabbi any more than I, as a woman, should have had to wait 2,000 years before I could become a rabbi. So there's a big difference between religious teachings in Judaism and social and political ways that people behave, you might say. In Judaism, there's the only qualification you have to be a rabbi is to know things that rabbis know and to be able to guide other Jews. So that's, you know, the argument I make in terms of why a woman can be a rabbi, and a transgender person can also be a rabbi if they know what a rabbi is supposed to know. So it's very exciting to see it finally happening, because it's long overdue.
Rabbi, for people who aren't familiar with Jewish tradition, are Jewish spaces in Portland, are they welcoming for trans folks and for queer folks more generally?
Well, it's like, unfortunately, it's like anything else, right? Because every space is occupied by human beings, and every human space where there's a community has its own culture. So there are spaces that are scary for women and spaces that are safe. And there are spaces that are scary for queer folk and spaces that are safe in Judaism, as in almost every other Western civilization space. And there's a group called the Group of Welcoming Congregations that was very important in Oregon for maybe 20 years. They did a lot of work around making sure that people knew where they would be safe. These days, it's more word of mouth, I guess, because it's not simply a matter of how you call your politics or whether you're seen as socially progressive. It's also, there's also just a sense of, you know, how sometimes you can walk into a space and it either feels good or it doesn't. And it's almost, it's not a matter of what people overtly say. It's a matter of what they actually feel. It's one of the reasons why, as a Jew, I'm not crazy about the idea of, you know, being tolerated or accepted in an interfaith setting. I want to be celebrated for what I am and who I am in every setting. And you can kind of tell the difference between whether you're tolerated or celebrated in any space. And that, I think that's just humanity. But there are plenty of spaces in Jewish community that accept and celebrate every human being. And I can even say that, you know, I know an Orthodox rabbi who holds that tenet as closely to his heart as I do.
One of our speakers, Hillary House, is talking from the Catholic tradition, and she talks about how within Catholic tradition, transgender people aren't really accepted, even though there have always been transgender people in the Catholic Church. How does that work in Jewish tradition? Like, does the tradition as a whole have something to say about whether or not trans people?
Sure. Well, to go back to what I said earlier about how the Talmud recognizes that there are lots of different gender expressions, I should have said that the Talmud doesn't say that in any kind of way that is disapproving. The Talmud recognizes 6 or 7 different gender expressions, different kinds of human beings, and is not at all interested in distinguishing between those that are good and those that aren't. So in Judaism, there's an awareness of people occupying very many different roles and many different identity expressions in the more, I guess you could say that traditionally in the more conservative little villages of the Jewish people, there's a little bit more of a hesitancy in knowing where people fit sometimes, but there's no demonization of human beings as such. There's sometimes there's some concern over the way people might act, but there's no condemnation of a human being for who they are. That's just absent in Judaism. So the fact that a transgender person can be a rabbi is not at all in conflict with Jewish teachings. It's more in conflict with the politics of human beings who happen to be Jewish, if you see what I mean.
Thank you. Rabbi Ariel, thank you so much for joining us on Transpositive. My last question, and I'm going to give away all of my journalist integrity right now, because you are my rabbi, and I heard you say one time that transgender people were in some ways perhaps closer to the divine than maybe some other people, such as maybe cisgender people. Could you tell me what you meant when you said that?
God is not singly gendered. The only way to understand a God, a divinity, is by understanding the implications of what's meant if we truly believe that each one of us is created in God's image. God can no longer be, can no more be all female than God can be all male. If God is a pluralistic kind of reality, if God is something that includes all of us, then someone who has experience of gender beyond the narrow confines of a cis person understands something on some profound level, or maybe doesn't understand it, maybe feels something on some profound level, which is closer to the intent of what it means to be whole and what it means to be holy.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking. We've been talking with Rabbi Ariel Stone of Congregation Shir Tikva. They're hosting the Interfaith Vigil this year. It's going to be at 5 o'clock at Congregation Shir Tikva. Thank you, Rabbi, so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much, and have a good evening.
As we continue to work for justice and equality for transgender and gender nonconforming people, we mourn those that we have lost in 2021. Tyana Alexander, Samuel Edmund Damian Valentin, Bianca Banks, Dominique Jackson, 50 Bands, Alexis Braxton, China Carrillo, Jeffrey J.J. Bright, Jasmine Kennedy, Jenna Franks, Diamond Kyrie Sanders, Rihanna Pardo, Jaida Peterson, Dominique Luscious, Remy Fennell, Tiara Banks, Natalie Smut, Iris Santos, Tiffany Thomas, Carrie Washington, Jahiro D'Alto, Whispering Wind Bear Spirit, Sophie Vasquez, Danica Henson, Serenity Hollis, Oliver Taylor, Thomas Harden, Poe Black, E.J. Boykin, Adelin Evans, Taya Ashton, Shai Vanderpump, Tierra Marie Lewis, Miss Coco, Pooh Johnson, Desaya Munahi, Brianna Hamilton, Kier Lapree Cartier, Mel Groves, Royal Poetical Stars, Zoella Rose Martinez, Joe Acker, Jesse Hart, Ricky Otumoro, Markeisha Lawrence. May their memory be a blessing. Thank you.
Did you miss the Afro-Caribbean and Reggae Marathon? No worries. You can go to kboo.fm/ACR to listen to the archived show. You can also snag a limited edition KBOO Afro-Caribbean and Reggae hoodie before November 20th to show your support for the music and the programming you love. Again, you can catch the Afro-Caribbean and Reggae Marathon and snag a limited edition hoodie at kboo.fm/ACR.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring for a web and new media coordinator. Our web and new media coordinator is responsible for KBOO's website and social media accounts. Applicants should have experience administering a CMS such as Drupal and experience administering a MySQL database, including backups and queries. For a complete job description,